Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. Today we have a nice interview with a mid-grade author of Gamelit, which is interesting. We'll get into that later. Right now I want to start out with some announcements. So if you've been following me on social media, then you already know I've been doing some home and car repairs, trying to catch up on things that I neglected while I was writing and editing and pushing my book out. But big things recently that I haven't talked about on social media yet is that I just set up a store. Like if you want to buy directly from me, now you can. All that's for sale on the store yet is the ebook, but I'm working to get the print books up there as well. And also it's a hideous website. There's nothing there. I guess it's not hideous, but it's not attractive either. It's very basic. There are three images. It's the ebook cover, you know, or the front cover of the book. And it looks like there are three things initially, but the other two things are the paperback and the hardcover copies of the book. But they're out of stock until I hook things up to be able to sell them, which I intend to do very soon. So by the time you hear this, it might be there, or maybe next week. So yeah, that store is at grandhill.media, and that's going to be, you know, I see, like, in the future, as I have more products, more books, and perhaps if somebody else ever wanted to write into my IP space, like if somebody wanted to write something else in the Nightshade Unicorn universe or in the Grand Hill universe, I would be open to entertaining that and bringing them on to license their work and to sell that through my brand, grandhill.media or Grand Hill Media. But anyway, that's all hypothetical. Maybe it'll happen, maybe it never will. But right now, you can go on to grandhill.media to buy my ebook, Nightshade Unicorn Forerunner, and it will be delivered through BookFunnel. And we tested it out. My wife went on there and bought the ebook, and she was able to download it and get it into her Kindle app. So that was pretty cool, I gotta say. It all works. And we saw, you know, the charge come out of the account for the card that we used. We saw that charge come out. I have not checked today, but maybe the money that WooCommerce pays to us after having completed the transaction, maybe that's here yet, or maybe I still need to figure out how to get paid from them. But yeah, we'll figure that out. Also, I am revamping my author page, and you might already have seen that on thorn.link/t-s-pedramon. It's a little ungainly, so now I've gone and registered pedramon.com, and that's where the page is now, largely unchanged from how it was before, but I'm working to update it, expand it a little bit, you know, make it something that the people want to go to learn about me as a writer and find links to my books. And actually the links are there. You can go and it'll link you to grandhill.media, or if you want to buy it on Amazon, that link is there. Or if you want to buy it on Google or Apple, you can get there through pedramon.com. And one more really exciting thing is that I am starting to go to in-person events. So if you just really wanted to meet author T.S. Pedramon in the real world, you can do that next week. I don't expect any of my listeners, all of my listener, to deprecate myself as the hosts of the Car Talk radio show used to do. For all of my listener who want to see me in the real world, you can do so in the Central Rappahannock Public Library System branches. So next Tuesday on the 26th, March 26th, I'll be at the Cooper branch in Colonial Beach. That's on Washington Avenue from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. The next day on Wednesday, the 27th, I'll be at the Fredericksburg branch on Caroline Street from 3 to 6 p.m. And finally, on Thursday, the 28th, I'll be at the Newton branch in on Coles Point Road in Hague or Hog, Virginia. Obviously, I know it's named after the city in Europe, but I don't know how they pronounce it locally because I've never been there. I guess we'll find out next week. On Thursday, the 28th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and then I will be at the Montrose branch on Polk Street in Montrose, Virginia, from 3 to 6 p.m. And in the podcast next week, I'll tell you where I'll be the following week, because I do have more library signings on the 2nd, the 3rd, and on the 9th and the 10th. And that will basically exhaust the Central Rappahannock library system. I have yet to reach out to other systems, but I do intend to do more author signings, and I'll be bringing copies of my book there. And yeah, I'm excited. It'll be fun. I hope that sales tax isn't too complicated, because these are in like different places and different counties, and so maybe sales tax will be complicated. I hope to, whatever, you know, I'll do what I have to do, and I hope people buy all my books, but I hope I don't run out before the end of the event and have to pay extra to get more books rushed to me. But yeah, I'm excited, and it'll be fun. And we'll move on to the interview section now. Today, I am with author and rocket scientist Eldon Walsick, Walsick. Now, this is an old friend of mine, and so as of today, he is, after my father and my sister, the person with whom I go back the farthest, who has come on the podcast. Now, Eldon, how do you want to do things with your, how separate is your pen name and your real name? Do you want to keep that?
Not very separate. So my real name is Jordan Walser.
Okay.
My wife was worried that I'd have hordes of adoring fans, and she didn't want them busting down our door. So she wanted me to write under a pen name. Also, I didn't really want people finding my middle grade Minecraft novels when they search for my name. I'd rather be known for my professional work under my real name. That's why I write under Eldon Walsick, but I've not done a very good job keeping them completely separate. So
yeah,
I'm fine with people knowing who I am.
I'm running under a pen name as well, and I think it's nice to have some amount of separation, and I have that persona that goes with the written work. But I've told myself that if I ever write nonfiction, then that'll go under my real name.
I totally see that. Another reason I chose to do the pen name is eventually I want to write things for more of an adult audience. So I want to keep those two genres separate. So I have a second pen name, DJ Reslaw, that have one published short story under. That's for System Apocalypse anthology. So it's a progression fantasy short story.
So, let's talk about that again later. What I do know about you writing is your Wyoming Bones series, which I think is a hilarious concept. I haven't. Sorry if I'm kind of talking loud. I just am. Whatever. I haven't read them myself, but my daughter has, and she might show up here in a while. She needs to brush her hair first. You know, put down the rules, but I think it'd be great if she could come on and ask some questions from fan to author, if you don't mind.
No, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. So we'll see if she finishes brushing her hair in time, and play that as it comes. But tell us about, and I guess it genre wise, we would call it mid-grade game lit.
Yeah, or mid-grade adventure stories. Yeah, it's basically Indiana Jones, but set in Minecraft. The concept I came up with, and I needed to come up with a similar sounding name. And Jones rhymes with bones, and if his name was going to be Bones, he was going to be a skeleton. So it's about a archaeologist, and in this case, he's a history teacher in a school, not a professor. I wanted to age it down a little bit. Who gets cursed to become a skeleton, and he's searching for a way to turn back into his human self because he's tired of everyone running away screaming when they see him. Eventually gets a magic hat that makes him look human, so I can play with both characters a little bit.
I think that's hilarious that people run away screaming when they see him. Let me see if I can get some of the cover art on screen here for the people who will watch this on YouTube. Wyoming Bones. And did you tell me previously that this is something that you work on with your kids? Like they give input.
Yeah. One of the everyone's favorite character in the book is a slime named Blurble. And that was an invention of my eldest daughter. She wanted a funnier character in there and suggested a slime. And recently the book I'm writing now, books 6 and 7, is more pirate themed. And I was going to have a pirate in there named Redbeard. And she suggested Blockbeard instead. And it's a much better name. Blockbeard the pirate for a Minecraft character. So I read them the story as I write it, as a bedtime story, and get feedback, which is fun.
So as a bedtime story?
Yeah. Chapter 9.
And you're putting them out at a decent pace. How long, what is your pace? Is it like a book every 6 months? Is it that fast?
It averages out to about that, although this last book is taking longer. It's taking over a year. Book 6, I try to keep them a little bit shorter. The first book's only about 30,000 words. But book 6 was on pace to be over 100,000 words. And so I decided to split it. And so now it's turning into two books that are 60,000 words. It's just a bigger story that I wanted to tell with it. This one's taking over a year to write both of the books together.
Yeah. Well, and I'm impressed because you're doing it while you have a full-time job. Before we go on, I think I've got it set up. So if you're watching on YouTube, now you can see this cover art on screen. Let me just center the book cover. So that's what the cover looks like. And we've got Wyoming Bones as a skeleton on it. So like with the way the Minecraftian artwork looks, I don't think he looks scary, but you know, that's within the world of so naturally people would be frightened.
Yeah. I mean, normally skeletons shoot arrows at you and you don't like that. So
so it's known that skeletons shoot arrows.
Yeah, in Minecraft, I don't know if you've ever played Minecraft very much.
I haven't.
Skeletons are a mob, a monster that comes out at night, and they always have a bow and arrow, and you'll hear this thwang and know that there's a bow-wielding skeleton somewhere around there. There's also zombies that come out at night and other creatures, but skeletons are something you want to avoid if you're a villager in Minecraft.
Yeah. So picking back up on your writing pace, I think that's, if you've done something along the lines of 6 months for a book while you still maintain your full-time job, that's a pretty good pace. I guess it does help that they're kind of shorter books.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would definitely help. So I'm writing YA, and mine are longer. I say that as if there are multiple books yet. There aren't multiple books yet.
I just read your first one. It was good.
Oh, thanks. Are you talking about Nightshade Unicorn that just came out? Or
yeah,
okay.
That's
right. You beta read, or you arc read?
Yeah, it was good. So hopefully that launch is going well for you. Or yeah, it just launched a few days ago, I think.
A week. Yeah.
Week. Yeah.
Yeah, and that, like, when I finally had time to concentrate on it, it took me about 2 months to write. But then there's all the extra work after that, editing and beta read and edit again and formatting and then publishing. So all in all, it took 6 months for the book, but it's already my full-time job, you know? So to put out a book in 6 months, even if it's a shorter one, I think it's a good pace. That's nice.
Thanks. Yeah, I try for about 500 words a day. I usually get to squeeze that in on my lunch break at work, because once I'm at home, I'm a full-time dad. I bring my laptop up to a little cubicle they have up in the break room and hope I don't get disturbed. Usually I do. So that's why I only get 500 words. But it's an interesting way to write, but it's what I got.
Yeah. Yeah. I think something that I run into that makes it challenging for me to keep up any kind of steady pace is it's hard for me to get into the mental space where I'm writing, where I have a complex plot, and it's, I have to reload everything back into my mind, before I can continue, or I'm going to write something that's contradictory.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to ease it going forward by having a better plot, a better outline. So
I have to do the same thing, where I spend a lot of my time thinking about what's going to be happening next, and unless I spend some time throwing in a quick outline somewhere, a lot of that thought time is wasted. Sometimes I'll feel like I have it all planned out, and then I'm going to go to sit down to write. I don't know how to get to where I was in that outline. So I have to write it down. Just a bullet point list helps me when I do have, helps make the best use of the time I have to write.
Yeah. 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 I don't know how some people with complex plots do discovery writing, you know, like, don't you get lost? Like,
and so a lot of those authors do get lost, and then they have to do a lot of editing. Now,
did you always know that you wanted to write a book? And sorry, these questions are like totally random, but we're catching up after years.
Yes.
You know,
I've always loved books. I've always been a big reader, a lot of fantasy and sci-fi, Indian in the Cupboard when I was a kid. Lots of good books. But I wrote short stories when I was in like middle grade, high school. Like, I think they're Pokemon fanfic. But I always have wanted to be, I've always been very practical, and I've always wanted to be a provider for a family, even before was a dad. It's always been a goal of mine. And so I decided to become an engineer, and put away the childish thoughts of being an author. But as I have become more settled in my career and seeing the expansion of independent writing, removing the hurdle of having to try and get an agent and get traditionally published.
Yeah.
I decided, why not have fun? If I'm going to have a midlife crisis, it might as well be something I enjoy, and writing is fun. That's why I decided to pick it up. I've been writing novels for about 3 years now. It's fun.
Yeah. And that reminds me again, I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I heard Jim Carrey talking about his father, who apparently played a mean saxophone, but he took the safe route and became an accountant. And then at one point, the company he was working for downsized or got purchased. I don't know, but he got laid off. You know, so here he was, jobless. He failed at something he didn't really want to do. So what Jim Carrey's takeaway was, is that if you're going to fail at something, at least have it be something that you want to do.
That's good advice.
I would temper that you do need to pay the bills somehow, but sometimes, take a leap and see how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, I really admire what you're doing in your own career, coming out of the Marines and then, really studying how to become a full-time author and diving into it. I think that's wonderful.
I just hope it works out. It's a big gamble.
It's a leap of faith.
Yeah. And so the book launched last week and I'm averaging about a sale per day. but you know, I haven't really gotten the word out there in a big way yet, I guess. Obviously there's this podcast, but it doesn't have a huge following. I have a newsletter with about 30 subscribers. Again, not huge. And so my not audience base, but yeah, I guess my audience for my voice when I shout out, hey, this book is available, is very small. I haven't tried running ads yet. It's probably not the thing to do yet.
No.
I'm talking about the 20 books crowd. They say you probably want to have 3 books out and then you start advertising the first book in the series. Because you pay so much cost per click or whatever. And if you actually have conversions happening, you might not be earning anything off of it. But if you sell book one, some of those people are going to like book one and want to buy book two and then on to book three. And so once you have 3 books, then your cost per click, you can afford for it to be higher because you're going to have part of that audience reading through and buying books 1, 2, and 3. So I haven't tried advertising yet. I might. I am getting ready to start going to events. I mean, it's such a long ramp, such a slow ramp up process, where I'll be going to libraries starting in 3 weeks, approximately.
Nice.
And doing signings and they'll let me sell copies there. And I am watching delivery dates for the proof copies I've ordered from Amazon are they going to arrive in time for me to look at them and make sure they're good before ordering a bunch that I can take to these signings?
You definitely want to do that. I have, and at least once I've ordered 20 copies and then discovered a print error, a chapter had been cut short. Like it was missing half of the chapter and I had 20 copies I couldn't do anything with. So I had to fix everything. I'm doing it all through KDP, Amazon KDP, and they make it very easy to upload a new copy, luckily.
Yeah. And I'm using KDP and Ingram Spark. And I got a proof back. I got an e-proof from Ingram Spark the other day. And they had taken a while to process this one. And they came through and I opened it up and I'm like, oh no. It was an early upload that was still in there, and the title page was hideous. Here, let me show you. No, it's too complicated. I could show you, but it's too complicated. The default font within within Atticus, software I use to format, the default font for chapter headings does not fit my genre, and it's like some you might expect to see it in Dune, you know, it's some old sci-fi. And so that was like on the title page. I was like, oh no. So I already had a better version ready, so I just had to upload it and resubmit that.
Good. Yeah, I use Atticus as well. That's fantastic.
I'm time visitor.
1 second.
Hawthorne, te dije que iba a estar grabando. Por favor, no es bueno. Puedes estar ahí, pero silencioso, ¿ok? Shh. Si no estás silencioso, voy a tener que sacarte, ¿ok? Shh. Gracias.
Yeah, what were you saying?
Oh, yeah, I was saying I use Atticus as well, and I had a formatting issue with the title page recently. And I saw that font on one of the previews that I downloaded, and like, oh, we need to fix that. Because I use a very Minecraft-looking font for my chapter titles. And I don't need a Dune font. I just don't.
Yeah. What's your whole process, beginning to end? So obviously you write a book. Then what?
So I write a book, and then I have a writer group that I'll go through some of the chapters with when I have issues. And then I have my wife read it. She is she's good at spotting grammatical errors. And we read it. She reads it and points out issues that she might see with the story. I'm reading it to my kids at the same time, and they let me know parts that are funny or slow, and I can adjust those. After I have that where I want it, the storyline and editing of that is done, I have a proofreading company that I send it to. And they do a proofread through it to make sure everything's consistent, and the grammar is where it should be. I also go through ProWriting Aid before I send it to her. Just to polish it up a little. Although I don't agree with about half of what ProWriting Aid tells me to do. But it gives me another way to look at it. And then after it's through the proofreader, my wife and I read it out loud to each other. And that lets us hear a lot of the repeated words or other things that just don't sound right when it's spoken. We send it. We create right now we're in the process of getting all the books illustrated. We're adding 10 illustrations to each of the books. And so the current process involves choosing 10 scenes that we want to see illustrated and sending it to our illustrator to get those made. And then we load it all into Atticus, download several different versions of it as we iterate through until we get it looking like we want, upload it to KDP, and we're good to go.
Nice. Sounds like a thorough process. On ProWriting Aid, I hear you. Like you don't agree with all the suggestions, and I'm looking for this one author's name. I'm bad with names. I've had him on the podcast. He was on the podcast around September or October of last year. Oh my goodness. But he called it a voice eraser.
Yeah. Yeah, be really careful not to let it erase your voice.
Yeah, because it will eradicate your distinctive word choices to make it more, to make it fit better what it perceives to be the standard way that people write. In other words, vanilla.
Yeah.
Shoemaker. That's it. Something Shoemaker. Sorry, I have to know. Martin L. Shoemaker. Yeah. He called it a voice eraser. And I felt that way too.
Yeah. Yeah, I accept about less than half of the suggestions, but it's a good way to just to see another way of looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah. It does catch a lot of things.
Yeah.
Now, what are you writing under Reslaw?
Yeah, DJ Reslaw. So that one, the short story I have in there is in the System Apocalypse universe. I don't know if you've read Much Progression Fantasy.
I'm not familiar.
It's basically the idea is that a game system, a magic-like game system, has come down from outer space and taken over the Earth. Suddenly, monsters start spawning, and people can have classes and abilities and level up. And 90% of humanity dies. It's an apocalypse because most people aren't used to fighting giant monsters or giant ants or whatever. And so the short story I wrote was about a fellow who was drunk at the time. He was a party planner. And when he was asked to choose his class, chose the party planning class, which there are not very many parties during the apocalypse. So his class is next to useless. But he uses it to, and in the short story, he uses it to bring two groups of people together to fight a bigger threat and save the town. So it's a fun little 8,000-word short story in this little anthology, and it was fun to write. Eventually, I want to write a progression fantasy series that I'm plotting out, and we'll probably try to write that after I finish this Dex Wildly Bones book. But it's I have plans. I'm not there yet.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to find the time.
Yeah. 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 Well, and what else do you want to tell us about Wyoming Bones? Like my 12-year-old thought it was really funny. She thinks it's funny.
Good.
And we ordered the most. Sorry, we keep talking at the same time. We ordered the most recent two books a little while before Christmas, and they came, and then we didn't open the package. The package came, I was like, I know what's in this, but my 12-year-old was not keeping up very well with her schoolwork, and she will read anything that she can touch. So we didn't tell her what was in there, and she didn't know that they had arrived, because if she knew, she would read them when she should be doing something else. So they're good books. Going off of her behavior, they're good.
Good. Good. I'm glad. Yeah, I wrote them primarily because my kids were reading Minecraft novels, and they're good, but they weren't really something I enjoyed reading to them. And so I wanted to write something that an adult would enjoy reading to their kid. As well as the kid would enjoy reading. And so I decided to write this story. But I enjoy adding the little twists of humor in there for the kids. The most recent thing we have released is a blurbal short story, because like I said, blurbal is a favorite. Lerbal is this slime that loves eating magic and magical artifacts and magical things, and can do things that people don't understand why he does what he does, or it does. It's a non-gendered character because it's a slime. It doesn't have a gender, and I'm never doing that again. Writing it for everything is complicated. I always write he and then I have to go and fix it. But the playing around with that character has been a lot of fun. Because no one can understand Blurble. Blurble doesn't talk. Blurble blurbles. But Blurble, but writing from its point of view, is one of the funner things to do because it has a very young, childlike point of view and thinks everyone is its friend until it decides something is a bad guy and then it has to be destroyed. And thinks that Blurble is much stronger than it really is. So it's just been fun to write that. And then seeing things from everyone else's point of view and seeing this little tiny slime, you know, attacking this giant monster. And everyone's concerned about the slime, but the slime's not concerned at all. Slime knows it's awesome. So
a couple of thoughts. I participate in a writing group every couple of weeks, and recently somebody had a story with non-human characters involved, and one of these non-human characters, the writer is using the pronoun they, and I had to tell her, like, just from a strictly practical point of view, it's difficult. I see the word they, and I think that I try to re-understand the sentence, because obviously you're talking about multiple entities here, because you said they or them. So I trip over the sentence, you know? Yeah. I'm like, hold on, what did I miss? Oh, wait, that's right. It's just the non-gendered character thing. And I suggested that she go with Dragon Ball Z's Piccolo. Non-gendered character, but he looks masculine, so we call him a he. It's just, yeah, we know it's not a he, but it's what we do.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then you said the Blurble, the slime, just no slime is awesome. That makes me think of Stormlight Archives character, Lift.
Oh, yes. Yeah, Lift is a fun character. I'm wearing my Hoid shirt right now.
I didn't notice.
Yeah, hard to see. Hoid, the president. Huh. For those who don't know, Hoid is a character from Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere novels. And Lift is also a character. But yeah, Lift has a very similar point of view, where Lyft is awesome, Blurble is awesome. They know they can, they know they'll be fine. But Blurble often does occasionally have times where he has to face fears and decide to be brave, even though it knows it's going to be fine because it's awesome. But this is going to be a scary thing to do.
I kind of see. I guess now we're talking about character and how you develop a character or portray a character. I kind of see Alava as being the complementary opposite of that, where she doesn't know that she'll be fine.
Yeah.
But I've decided that she'll be fine, but she doesn't know that. And she's going to try anyway. She's going to jump in to do what she has to do, even though it might do her in. And I would say it's kind of the yin and yang, whatever.
Good. As an author, you get to play with a pretty wide range of characters. Like Wyoming is very adventurous, but definitely is aware that he could get killed. I call it poofed. I don't say anything gets killed, they get poofed. Because in Minecraft, when you die, you poof into a cloud of smoke and drop items. So he knows he can get poofed at any time, but he goes in to save the day anyway. And then there's Blurble, who has no concept of getting poofed, thinks it's going to be just fine because it's awesome. And then I have other characters in there that have various, you know, courage levels or different motivations.
Does Wyoming Bones face danger from other skeletons, or do they identify him as one of their own?
If he has a hat on that makes him look human, they will try to attack him. If he takes the hat off, he's fine, which is fun to play
with.
But
he likes his hat.
He likes his hat. He loves his hat.
Okay.
Tries to save his hat at every instance. But often if he takes the hat off, so he's fine from, he's not going to get attacked by the zombies or the skeletons or what have you, then the skeletons will go after his friends. And he doesn't want that. So he keeps the hat on, so they'll attack him instead.
Now, is it all, does he run around with a sword? How does he defend?
Yeah, he has a trusty iron sword. In recent books, he's acquired a sentient diamond blade called the Founder's Blade. That is another character that my kids love. But yeah, he uses a sword or bow and arrow when needed.
Now, are the books more? Are the books more episodic or I want to say progressional or progressive, but I don't want to be confused with progressive fantasy, which is a thing where the character is like leveling up. With Nightshade Unicorn, I'm telling a story and it's going from beginning to end, and each book is going to end on a punctuation in that story, but the story is continuing and everything that's happening, everything that's told, is part of getting from the beginning to the final end.
When I started Wyoming Bones, I intended it to be episodic. So you could pick up one book and be just fine going into it. Have a very static character in the same situation at the beginning and the end. You can pick whatever one you want. But as I've been writing, a story has emerged. And now they are trying to stop the Illager Empire. So they're the villagers in Minecraft, and then there are Illagers.
Okay.
And I've made them the Nazi stand-in for Wyoming Bones, that are trying to take over the world and find the Cube of Creation, that will allow them to take over the world and rewrite reality in their image. So they're finding different fragments of that cube in these different stories and trying to keep it out of the hands of the Lady Shade, who runs the Illager Empire. So it is both episodic, as well as there's an overarching story as well.
Kind of like Animorphs.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot like Animorphs.
I was actually thinking, I was talking to somebody last night about Avatar The Last Airbender versus the new The Last Airbender live action series.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have not seen the live action. I love the cartoon. They told a cohesive story and then got out, which was fantastic. But I haven't seen the live action.
So the live action, it equates season one to season one, you know, where the large story from season one of the cartoon becomes the large story of season one of the live action, but they've condensed 20 episodes into 8, and they're longer episodes, but it's still condensed.
Yeah.
where you have things like the Badger Moles in their secret tunnel are underneath Omashu.
so it happens in the same episode as King Bumi. You know, it's kind of awkward the way they restructured the events in the first season. And then but the thing is that the live action is not episodic, like the it's like an extended movie broken up into pieces.
Yeah.
Whereas the cartoon was that, but it was also largely episodic. Like the koi fishing, yeah, next to Kyoshi Island. Not koi fishing, but the what's he call it? Elephant koi?
Yeah,
where he rides.
Going surfing on him.
Yeah, the windsurfing thing that had nothing to do with the larger story overall, except that that's what brought him to that island in the cartoon. In the live action, he goes there to try to commune with Avatar Kyoshi. And so since that is the reason to bring him to the island, there's no reason to spend time on the elephant koi. It's just not there. It was a purely episodic element, so it was taken out.
Yeah, and that'd be an interesting story problem. I don't envy those writers having to try to break what people loved about the original and bring it into this different format. So you're not going to make anyone happy.
I postulated last night that it may have been writers versus producers, where the writers like jammed a lot of stuff into those 8 episodes. They jammed a lot of things. And that's why you have multiple things happening in the same episode that were in 3 or 4 different episodes in the cartoon. But the producers, so the writers like, this all has to be in there. And the producers like, no, we got to cut it down. Got to cut it down.
Yeah. I'm sure the authors would have loved to have, you know, another 2 episodes would have helped a lot, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm. Or even 4.
Yeah.
Rose, is your hairbrush? Do you want to come and make ask some questions? I didn't hear you.
I'm brushing my
hair. Not ready yet.
Okay. Yeah, one of my favorite things, I have some friends who have a daughter about your daughter's age. And she wasn't a big reader until she found Wailing Bones. And now she devours, you know, Harry Potter and other novels. But Wailing Bones was her gateway drug. And that just makes me smile.
Maybe gateway drug to Nightshade Unicorn someday.
Hey.
So I wanted to ask about, you have in-book illustrations as well as the book cover. And you also have professional copy edit. So are sales supporting all these, and are you turning a profit on top of that, or is it just it's a hobby and it's fun?
Right now it's a hobby and fun. We are not turning a profit yet. We're averaging a sale or 2 a day. Especially we're in the Kindle Unlimited program. So we're always having some readers on there. But we are spending more on illustrations and marketing and publishing than we're bringing in. But it is fun. So I'm spending less than a lot of people spend on renovating cars.
Yeah.
But and we are seeing a lot of progress. Year over year, we've more than tripled what we made the year before. As we're producing more books, we're seeing quite a bit of growth. So I have hope that eventually it will pay for itself. The illustrations are something that I decided to add recently because they are more popular for this age group, middle grade fiction. They like having some type of illustrations in there. And I decided to give them what they wanted. And plus it's a lot of fun to see these scenes that are in only my head come in full color.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, you made me think about, because you mentioned you hope that one day it will be a good source of income. And obviously I hope that for my work as well, but I'm trying to do something that's honestly unlikely to work, I guess. And I'm trying to condense that ramp up time into a short period. And that's the things that are going to go into that are like going to the library signings, going to conventions. And it's a big gamble as to whether it'll work, especially because I only have one book so far. And people talk about conventions being a significant way to make part of their income. And I'm going to handicap myself because I won't be there on Sunday. You know, a lot of conventions are like Saturday, Sunday, and I won't be there on Sunday.
Yeah.
So
that will be difficult. I've only done one small convention. It was at a local library. And that was, it was fun to talk to people, tell them about my book. Sell, you know, 10 copies or so. But I haven't done more than that yet. Mostly because, you know, it's hard to find time to do that with a full-time job.
Yeah. And I'm going to jump on our local elementary school spring carnival. It's going to cost me $25 and I'll bring a table and set up there. And honestly, the elementary crowd will be below my reading level, my book's reading level, but their parents will be there. Their older siblings will be there.
Yeah. And so, you know, there are definitely kids that read at a higher grade level.
Yeah.
So, and there was nothing objectionable for an elementary school kid in your book. Some things, you know, there was definitely danger, but nothing I couldn't see a fourth or fifth grader reading.
Yeah, and I'm going to have another podcast guest soon. We're going to talk about clean fantasy, but yeah, I mean that's who I am. That's what I write. I saw her on Instagram and she's talking about, are you tired of skipping over the spicy bits in your favorite series? And I'm like, you know what? Let's have a conversation. Let's talk about it. So like, I don't see why there's not a need for it. The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
It's clean. There's violence.
Yeah.
But
I read Lord of the Rings when I was like 11. I mean, there was nothing bad there. It was just a fun adventure. So
huge, huge consensus that it's a great series and it doesn't have the objectionable stuff. There's no need to have it in there.
Now I hope I don't offend anyone. The smut, the spicy bits are in there because it sells. You know, unfortunately, that the biggest selling books out there are selling because they titillate.
Yeah,
not because they entertain. So
yeah, I want to catch kind of the same feel, I guess, that people get from The Lord of the Rings, where they come away from it like, that was a great story, and there's nothing stopping them from recommending it to somebody else. But I guess perhaps you could say I handicap myself again, because it's not sensationalistic, and the most sensationalist I get, it's really not the right word, is the title, Nightshade Unicorn, the juxtaposition of dark and something that's usually considered light and So I, at least I hope it's good for SEO, for search engine optimization, because if you search Nightshade Unicorn, you find me. But yeah. I need to get people searching Nightshade Unicorn.
Yeah, it does. It's very evocative. Nightshade Unicorn is very evocative.
I think. Sorry, we keep talking at the same time again. It reminds me of our canoeing activity that we did with the Boy Scouts.
Yeah,
and we had some arguments that day.
It was a while ago.
Yeah. So Wyoming Bones is also quippy and unique. So that's, you search Wyoming Bones. Oh, look, that's you. And I doubt you're paying Google a ton of money to get listed first.
No, it took a while. Apparently there's a Wyoming Bone Saw company where you can get bone saws. I did not realize that when I first started that. So for a while, they were the first ones at the top. So.
Yeah, I see that.
But yeah, one, something that sounded cool. Although I've had kids who are introduced to Wyoming Bones before Indiana Jones tell me, hey, this is like your book, when they see the movie. So
I saw a meme this morning pointing out the ways in which Dune copied Star Wars. And I knew it was a joke, but yeah, it was funny. For anybody who doesn't know, Dune was written over a decade before Star Wars came out. So Dune did not copy off of Star Wars.
That was one of the influences.
Yeah.
That is funny, though.
Yeah.
It's all about where people are introduced to things. Actually, one of the things that's fun about writing for the audience that I am is that for a lot of them, you know, for a lot of readers, some of the tropes I use would be old and tired. But for my readers, it's the first time they've seen it, so I don't have to worry about it.
Nice. Nice. I have a series I want to write mid-grade-ish. I guess I'd point it at high school. But, I mean, when I was in high school, I still loved reading Animorphs, and that was really pointed at middle school.
Yeah.
But I'll have to reach out and see if you can have your kids preview it once I write it. And I can't promise it'll be this year. But eventually, you know. And I'm still trying to figure myself out as a writer, where, you know, it took me 2 months to write Forerunner.
That's impressive.
Guardian is going to be longer, because in Forerunner there's the prologue and then it's the epilogue, and those have one character point of view, but the rest of the book is all from one other character. It's from the main character. In Guardian there's going to be more here and there, different character POVs.
That adds a lot of time. Yeah.
So there's that, but then I have one rep under my belt, so hopefully I'll be able to get through it faster. But while I figure myself out as a writer, I hope to intersperse writing on different projects. I know some authors do it, where one project can be a palate cleanser for the other project and vice versa. So maybe I'll be able to intersperse my mid-grade. I have a couple of them, actually. But, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Hopefully that'll work out. Was this your superhero story that you were working on? Or is this a different...
A different one. So the superhero story I think you're referring to is... I've called it GoHamasp, an intentionally awkward acronym for the Guild of Holders of Useless Superpowers. Of Marginally Useful Superpowers. GoHamasp. No, it's not that. And that's... I'm not sure what I'm going to do with that one. But one of them I'm calling Wardrobe. This kid who tried to join the basketball team, but there was a scheduling conflict and he wound up in home ec instead. And he learns to sew. And turns out he's good at it and he likes it. And when he sews a superhero costume, it gives you the powers of that superhero. So, wardrobe.
Here we had a little bit of a connection problem. You're only missing about 30 seconds, but we'll pick up right here.
Yeah, and I'll write those sooner or later, but first I need to figure out Nightshade Unicorn. I need to figure out my YA or adult fantasy is going to be the main push. After Nightshade Unicorn that I find myself pouring my soul into to make it good was originally intended to be the quicker option to push out to market, because I have two other series, one fantasy and one sci-fi, that I care a lot about, and they're actually interjoined with each other. Like the Dragon Riders of Pern has a sci-fi beginning.
Yeah.
So these two series are what I really want to push out, or at least that was the intention, but it's too involved. It would take me too long. I need a conlang. And so I'm like, all right, Nightshade Unicorn instead. And now like I'm agonizing over the plot, but then if he does this and then she does that and then, well, but they need to be here by this time for that to work. And
yes. And why would they do it that way? I need a reason for why.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why don't they just do this? Because they have to be there at this point. Hello. I need an excuse for them to, for that to make sense.
Yeah. So the story can happen.
Yeah.
Yes. I've agonized over the same things, and that's even for my middle grade fiction.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I do most of my thinking in the shower. Okay. Taking a very long shower and be like, oh yeah, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
That'll work.
I'm having some fun. I've written a couple of short stories in, well, one and a half in the Grand Hill universe. There's this kid who lives in a village at the roots of a giant tree, an enormous tree. There's a village in the branches and there's another one in the roots. And so it's in the Grand Hill universe, but it's an unrelated story. And it's just this girl whose mother sends her out to grab this thing from the market or to find it along the roadside, tunnel side, if she can find it. But anyway.
Yeah, I'll have to read that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're kind of winding up here.
Yeah.
Winding down, whatever.
Been a good discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, definitely.
And that wraps up our interview. Now, you can go and find Eldon Walsick's books by going onto Amazon and searching for Wyoming Bones. Or you can follow the link that I'm going to put in the show notes direct to his author page on Amazon, because you can find all his books there. And one more thing before we go. Something that you can do to help me out is to share and tell people about Nightshade Unicorn. You can tell them nightshadeunicorn.com. It's really easy to catch the memory, and they can go and on nightshadeunicorn.com, they'll find links to Amazon or to grandhill.media, wherever they want to buy it from. And you can also go and leave a review for the book on Amazon. Now, make sure it's a true and honest review. Don't go and spam it, because Amazon will smell it, and that is not good. But if you've read it, go and leave a review, because that helps other people find it, and that really helps me out. And I thank you so much for your time, and we'll see you next week.